I think the Song Sparrow might be one of my favorites. I'm telling you.
Absolutely. It's a good one. Yeah. Three-part song is relatively distinctive, which I like. I can normally tell it from other birds, but yeah, just a nice little summer ditty. I did check iNaturalist. It is the second most reported on sound.
Really?
For Minnesota in July. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, Minnesota in July. I feel like people don't talk about song sparrows nearly enough. How do you feel?
They really should.
Yeah.
It's such a, like, I feel like, okay, first of all, I think they're more identifiable by ear than robins. With like, the beginning, the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do is almost always very consistent, and it's so distinctive. And then that little tail piece is like where they kind of find their own unique voice, and what they do afterwards is a little bit unique. But yeah, I don't know. They deserve more credit.
You're listening to the Season Watch Pod. That's Charlie Mitchell. I'm Heidi Holton. It is the heat of summer in Minnesota, in northern Minnesota, where I am. And where Charlie, you're, how do you describe where you are? What, I don't need
I'm a little bit north of Stillwater.
Okay, I don't need an address. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm saying.
Gonna show up at my door with a song sparrow? Honestly, you'd be welcome to show up at my door with a song sparrow.
But it is hot. The air quality is not good. As we record this today, having to make some decisions with friends of mine, we had plans for being outside. Thinking of all the folks that are fighting those fires in the Boundary Waters right now, and the Boundary Waters has closed down. We've got some great photos by our photographer, Lori Schall. She's been up there taking photos at KEXC.org, and our news team covering this big news of smoke and fire and what's happening. So we hope they are contained soon. Hopefully by the time you're listening to this, they are. But it's summer, it's hot, it's dry.
And what a huge area to have to cover.
I know we have a lot to talk about, but how, when there is, so I'm working on writing up what we say on the air because we need to warn people and all of that kind of stuff. When you hear a warning about smoke like that, how do you personally take it? Does it affect what you do?
It really depends. So, you know, they give you different degrees of severity. If it is at the level where it's like, affect where it's known to affect everyone, I will cut down what I do outside, especially, you know, anything that's like cardio where I'd have to be breathing a lot. I probably won't do in high wildfire smoke just because it's bringing in so many of those particulates and whatever. But even, you know, on those days, I do try to get outside even for a little bit. Ooh, very unhealthy. Heidi is showing me your screen, which says very unhealthy.
Air Now is an app that is really good to have that's an air quality indexed. I know this is not exactly, this is the season of this though, and this is the Season Watch Pod, right?
And if you're getting outside, you need to be safe, so.
Yeah, it's a good thing to have that app and to keep a watch on that, especially if, you know, you have breathing issues, if you have any of that kind of stuff. But it's a hard thing to make sometimes make those decisions, so. I was out mowing early this morning, and the air quality was much, much different then. But even that, you can hear it a little bit in my voice, I think.
Yep.
So be careful out there.
I'm got air now. Oh, my air quality is moderate.
Oh, to be moderate.
Today, though, is looking bad. Jumps up to 154 soon.
Yeah, it's going to be affecting the whole state very soon, but definitely where we are in St. Louis County. I'm not in St. Louis County, but that's where the main fires are coming through Itasca, and it's hitting most of the state, and it's moving through the country as well. So watch, you know, it's just another thing to kind of keep a watch on, right? The extreme heat has been something we've been having to tell people about, and that was something we talked with Pam Perry about this week, about how birds handle the heat, and we got into the whole discussion about bird baths. And I'm just somebody who's never had a bird bath. And I asked about lakes because we live on a lake. And is that basically a bird bath? But not all birds are wanting to go there. So it was an interesting conversation about making sure the birds have water and everything. So,
yeah, I mean, this is all, you know, kind of becoming our new abnormal, the wildfire smoke and the extreme heat and everything else. And we're learning to adapt, and we now have an air purifier, which would have seemed like so excessive when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And we're figuring out what our personal levels of risk tolerance are in terms of like going out in the wildfire smoke. And yeah, but not fun.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to stop looking at the app right now. Okay. Cause they're telling me a lot of things there. So, and we've got so many things to talk about. We had a wonderful recording. Did it come in through SpeakPipe this week?
It did. Yeah. From Pierre Coo, sent us in from Hinterland.
Hi, this is Pierre Coo from Hinterland. And I noticed today a wildflower fuchsia by my tiger lilies, which just bloomed. And I'm not sure what it is, but it sure is beautiful. Also, on my morning walk, a red-bellied snake by the brook by our farm. And I hadn't seen that for maybe 4 years. And it looked like it was there just catching sun. I wasn't sure what to do. I just observed it. And then I also saw a snake skin just before that. It looked from a bigger snake. I couldn't tell what it was. So that must have been shedding or molting or whatever it's called. Also, the June roses are gone, but there's the purple astilbe, or I'm not sure what it is. I think we can make a tea of it. I learned that from a yoga class in Brainerd. I am west of Pequot Lakes. Yeah, and the dragonflies are gone. The deer flies are hungry when I'm in my garden in the morning. There's some bird going, ah, ah, something like that. And it feels like my chickens and roosters respond to it.
I loved that call.
I love hearing people mimic birds. Oh, my gosh.
I know. It's the best. Wonderful set of observations. I know as a kid, those like little red-bellied snakes, do you find those up where you are?
No, I never see snakes of any type. I think I just keep my eyes closed if there was snakes. Yep. Yeah.
Forcibly don't see them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're just these very tiny brown snakes with this bright red belly. And when I was growing up, they were, along with the garter snakes, probably one of the ones that I found most frequently. I don't see them as much anymore, but they're just great little snakes. They're tiny. They don't really bite. And if they do try to bite, they don't really have the ability to open their mouth wide enough to get you. Unless it's like a little tiny bit of flesh on your fingertip or something. And instead of having like fangs in the front, their fangs are like kind of backwards curved and in a different part of their mouth because they primarily eat snails and slugs. And so they just have a different tooth structure.
Okay.
Because of what they prey on. And they're just such friendly little guys. So I was happy to hear about that one. Any thoughts on what the was? Or the car, car.
This has to do with what Pam Perry was talking about, I think. This is the moms and the babies that are the same size as them. It was a very fun conversation about how people always assume, like with a cardinal, that you assume like, oh, the cute little baby cardinals, but they're going to be the exact same size.
They're the same size.
Yeah. I think that's what that is, right? Is the wanting to be fed.
Wanting to be fed. That was my guess. Yep. Along with, you know, John's Pam Perry's. But it also sounds very much like a classic crow caw.
Mm-hmm.
So who's to know? But the fact that the chickens are interested is fascinating to me.
Yeah. You never know. We were hearing some of this because of there was a hawk that the crows were getting whipped up about. So we were hearing a lot of calling from the, they were trying to. Seems like it would have been the other way around, that the hawk would be after the crow, but it was the crows that were making the noise and kind of pushing out the hawk.
Yeah, so crows kind of have a fight on sight attitude towards hawks.
Just like you.
You know. So aggressive all the time. Yeah, crows, blue jays, a lot of birds just don't like hawks because they see them as a threat. I think the way that the hawks have gotten the undying hatred of the crows is that they do tend to take their young. as little snacks. Same thing with owls. The crows absolutely give owls crap all day long, but then as soon as night comes, it's the other way around. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's interesting, like the different hierarchies. So like the crows will give the hawks a run for it. And then I also see like tiny little like red-winged blackbirds giving the crows grief every time they see each other. And yeah, all the way down to like nuthatches will definitely pick a fight with anyone who comes into their territory. I think it's just, you know, part of human nature, animal nature.
Mm-hmm.
Get too close to a territory and we're not going to get along well.
Oh, that was a great message, though, on SpeakPipe, and we always recommend that you leave one there. And we also heard from our friend from Little Falls.
Yes, Chad Kaditz.
Hi, guys. I thought I would share one short observation I had, which led to an entire day centered around one species. Last Friday, I was out in the morning with my dog and noticed two large mayflies that were flying upwards from our yard. They had a real kind of a unique spiral whirligig type pattern as they flew. So I was kind of fixated on them. And then a dragonfly came swooping in out of nowhere and grabbed one and flew over to some shrubs by our house to feed on it. So I tried to get close enough to get a picture and got some kind of poor quality pictures, but enough that I could at least go through my dragonfly books and identify it. And to the best of my knowledge, I figured out it was a widow skimmer, and I'm pretty sure it's a juvenile widow skimmer because it did not have as much gold as the females tended to have. And then I decided, so I've been trying to work on doing more nature journaling and writing, so I spent the afternoon drawing pictures of it and working on that. But then that afternoon I went outside and was picking some weeds, and sure enough, a beautiful female widow skimmer flew and landed next to me. So I got a great look at that. And then that evening I got an email from a former student who got some great pictures of a dragonfly he wanted to share. And sure enough, it was a male widow skimmer. So one short observation led to an entire day with.
Again, it cuts off. But, oh, I love that. And look, dragonflies. Dragonflies for you, Heidi.
Yes, for sure. The widow skimmer. What a cool. This is one we've talked about before, but I have not seen. I've kind of not done my due diligence on knowing more dragonflies, and now we're not seeing as many of them. But it's okay. Chad Kaditz is drawing them, so I feel okay.
And Chad Kaditz even sent me just today
the drawing.
His drawing.
Good.
And of course, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Colored pencil this time, since he's not in school to do chalk. Yeah, Chad has written an entire book. It's, hold on, let me grab it. A Central Minnesota Nature Journal, Exploring Our Local Phenology by Chad Kaditz.
Wow, that's
and
right.
It is just full of these phenomenal illustrations. Mayflies, leucistic birds, common dragonflies. Here we go. We've got the 12-spotted skimmer, the common green darner, white-faced meadowhawk, dragon hunter. Just wonderfully illustrated. Thank you, Chad. What a winner. Oh, but speaking of birds and insects, John Latimer mentioned a cool phenomenon this week about harvest times for fields and how the hawks go out hunting.
The hay fields near my home got harvested this last week, starting on Friday. They cut the hay on Friday, and they were raking it up and getting the bales made on Saturday. And what that does is it kind of opens up the fields, and you get these kestrels, which are a small falcon that eats a lot of grasshoppers. They have come back to the fields, and the northern harriers have come back to the fields. And the northern harriers are harriers. They can hover. They can float over the tops of the fields this way and that as they look for mice who are caught out away from their little hideouts this time of year, and especially right after the hay has been mowed. It's kind of a risky time to be out if you're one of those small critters.
Have you ever seen a northern harrier?
No, I don't think so. I'm going to...
Oh, they're so cool. just because the way that they hunt is so unique among our hawks, where they do this really low flying soar over the fields, like only 20 feet up. And so if you're, you know, a little mouse out mousing around and you look up to check for hawks, you're not going to see one because it's so low down. But by the time it comes upon you, it just drops like a rock right on top of you. Very good name, Northern Harrier. they have this really distinctive white rump patch that you see when they're flying. And their face looks a little bit like an owl's face. They have that kind of same flattened facial disc, which, because they fly so low, they can't always see their prey before they're on top of it. So I think they're listening for prey a lot of the times, too. I love summer. So many good birds.
This is making me think of Hawk Ridge, which I went by last fall as we were headed up the North Shore and spent a little time there. I'm looking up. They have some things going on for the summer coming up, and about some free events at Barker's Island in Superior, Wisconsin, that are accessible birding series. And they have one coming up at Hawk Ridge in October, and then they have their big kind of festival thing in September. So check it out. It was a surprise to me. It's not like a big, giant place. It's just a bunch of cool people hanging out that help you see. You know, they gave us great ideas. They said, we just missed a bunch, but let's go over here. Let's take a look at this. And I was expecting like the, the Teteguch State Park and the amazing, you know, building and all of that kind of stuff. But this is just people passionate about birds. Very cool.
I haven't been yet during migration season, so I'm hoping this year I'll get up there. Quick question. Do you think Barker's Island is full of dogs?
No, it is not.
Sorry. Should it be?
You wish. Yeah, well, sure, of course.
But yes, it's on my list to get up there for migration season. I would love to see. The numbers of hawks going over there is just out of hand.
Well,
probably get a couple lifers. Not that I pay attention to my life list that much, but still, it'd be exciting.
Well, we, of course, had the chance to talk to the always delightful Pam Perry this week, and Pam's watching a lot of things going on outside her window and when she's out birding.
Absolutely.
Pam, earlier this morning, Heidi mentioned that she was seeing young woodpeckers coming to her feeder, and I think she said that they were downies, or were they hairies?
Downies.
You told me last year, and I was not aware of this, but you said that the male, I can't remember if it was downy or hairy or both, but the male juveniles, the little red patch on their head migrates backwards. It starts in the forehead and eventually ends up sort of in the back of the head where the where Papa has his. What's all that about?
Yep. No, it's just, it's a way where they identify as being juveniles and not a threat, you know, to the territory or to another male.
Okay.
But yeah, the red's on the top of the head.
Yes.
On the forehead, you know, which is so interesting.
And is it both Downy and Harry that do this? Or?
I believe so.
Okay.
And I've seen it on both. Now, the fledgling woodpecker that I've seen, what spurred me to say, oh yeah, we need to talk about baby birds, was I had a couple pileateds come in 2 days ago or so, and one was a female. She went to the feeder and was eating suet, and the other one was kind of looking around and not sure where to go, and kind of flew to the roof of the house and then back here. And then it tried to land on the stove pipe that I have that holds up my feeders, keeps the squirrels out, and it slid down all the way to the ground. I went, oh, you're a youngster. You just came out of the nest. And so, yeah, then he finally got up to the feeder and looked around and looked around. And the female did feed him, and then he figured out kind of how to get in there and how to get to the suet on his own. You know, they learn quickly, but some of the antics, watch them, because the behavior is different. So sometimes you get the cues, like with the downy hairy young males with the red on the top of the head. Sometimes they look just like the adults. And I had a friend who asked me, so how big are these fledgling pileated?" And I said, "Well, they're the same size as the adults. When they leave the nest, they're the full size. So the same for the downies and the hairies. They're full size. Don't think you're going to see little miniature ones."
The antics of the youngins. Were we talking about this last week?
Yeah, I think we were, weren't we?
Were we recording at the time?
Who knows? We don't know. We could stuck in
any case. Oh, I love the antics of baby birds. And yeah, their like inability to perch on things. They're just clumsy. They can't figure out how to get the food from the feeder into their mouth.
And then we definitely were last week because we were talking about how that lines up with human babies too.
Yep. Oh my gosh, it's so funny. And then, yeah, especially woodpeckers and hummingbirds. Like, they've got these long beaks, and then they're these, like, especially when they're still in the nest, these tiny little chicks, and they're shoving this huge beak into this tiny mouth. It's amazing to me that, like, chicks don't die of getting punctured by their parents' beak when they're getting fed. Amazing.
You know, we also, in the conversation with Pam, we were talking about the wood ducks. We've got the mama wood duck coming in this hole, which is so fun. Last week was the first time I actually saw it go in there and come out.
Okay.
Which is really fun, how it kind of fits its body through there. But then, as Pam was explaining it, these jumpers, they're trying to climb inside. There's like metal. And they don't know how to fly. And it takes them falling out of this house and hitting the ground to, like, trigger something for them to fly. Am I getting that right?
Okay. So wood ducks, after they hatch, they get a strong urge, however many hours, to climb. So if you're raising them, you have to have metal inside so they've got something to climb up on. So that instinct is so strong. And the only thing that gets them to stop that instinct to climb is that jolt after they hit the ground. And that's what knocks them out of, like, this insatiable need to climb up things. That is fascinating.
Mm-hmm. So it's not, they're not ready to fly yet by any means, but they need this jolt. So, which makes me feel better because, I mean, I think it's probably unlikely I'm going to see the jumpers jump, you know, that I'm there exactly the right time. But I think my instinct in seeing it happen would feel like, oh, they broke all their bones or something when they need to happen.
Yeah. Oh, and I know you've seen the videos of them jumping, so I won't go into that again, but oh, so cute. I really hope you do get to see it. But have you been going by and listening for babies at all? Or,
you know, it's not far from our deck, but I haven't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. I'm going to do that next. I'm hoping. Mm-hmm. Right now, I have to ask Tom. I don't know if he spotted the mama duck today, but we're noting every day when we're seeing going in and out. So
in and out. Okay. Well, here's hoping. And I kind of hope they stay in the egg for a little while longer because that smoke might be good for their tiny little lungs.
We're back to the smoke. Yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Never mind. You didn't hear anything. Let's listen to some adorable kids.
All right.
Longway Conservation Center.
Hi, this is Izzy.
Hi, this is Lakota.
Hi, this is Henry from McGizzy in Minneapolis reporting on our trip to Longway Conservation Center. July 6th through the 8th, the temps were high of 85 degrees Fahrenheit. Jumping in the lake felt so good. The low was 55 degrees. We spent as much time possible in and on the water. During our canoe adventures, we saw two loons, two muskrats, and two beavers.
A couple of people from our group went fishing and caught a few small sunfish. The Long Lake staff said that this was a big deal because it shows that the DNR's restocking efforts are paying off. The DNR restocked the Long Lake with adult sunfish and crabbies a couple years ago after two bad winter kills. They appear to have survived and are reproducing.
There's good eating in the woods right now. There's chicken of the woods popping up in various places, including a few clumps that looked about ready to harvest. The first wild raspberries are ripe, and it looks like the blueberries aren't far behind. Despite all the natural foods available, a black bear got into the garbage on campus. I guess they were hungry for fast food. We had a great trip. We want to remind everyone to go jump in the lake, head to the woods for a snack, and as always, unplug, get outside, and live connected.
Black bear hungry for fast food. It's a good one. And I guess it, like, kind of does carry over. It's not great for them, but it is delicious and so convenient.
always good to hear the kids showing up at camp, the Long Lake Conservation Center, throughout the school year, but in the summertime too. And they're great about making sure that we get that audio. They're putting videos together. You can follow them on Facebook. You can actually watch these videos and everything. So we appreciate everybody who has been a part of Season Watch this week, and we want to hear from you. We love these messages. Maybe there's something you're watching. Maybe you got bird bath thoughts. Who knows? You can leave a message.
We would love to hear bird bath thoughts. Yep. Please send them.
You can. I just remember my grandma loved her bird bath. Mm-hmm. And going out and, you know, taking care of it because she loved watching the birds and everything. So it's a good thing in my head, but I still don't have a bird bath. You can leave a message through SpeakPipe because we want to hear your voice and it keeps us connected to each other.
Please do. Yeah. And like, what a joy the two SpeakPipe messages we got this year from, or this week from Pierre Koo and Chad Kaditz.
Are you saying this recording feels like a year?
I'm feeling like I'm so tired. Yeah. Maybe. No, recording this is always a joy. But I am very sleepy and the words don't come out right all the time. The Songsberry recording was from Greg Irving, who recorded it at Sherburn National Wildlife Refuge in 2018. The report on the hawks hunting after the harvest from John Latimer. Pam Perry with the Young Woodpeckers. And then Long Lake Conservation Center with that report.
Thank you so much to everyone. And Charlie, I want you to think about this for the next time that we talk. I think mm-hmm. I'm much more connected than I was when we started Season Watch last fall.
Yeah?
Yeah. To nature. See what you think. Just think on that a little bit and see if you feel like there's any different conversation from me. But I love it. I'm feeling more connected.
That makes my heart so warm and fuzzy. That's great. I'm glad to hear it, Heidi. I feel a lot more connected to you as we've been doing this.
Yeah.
We never got to work together creatively that much before the podcast.
Right. And
it's been great.
So we're getting ready for a membership drive coming up in a couple of weeks. Season Watch comes out of KAXE, which is a public radio station in northern Minnesota, the first rural public radio station in the nation. And mm-hmm. we're working hard, you know, with the loss of federal funding. We're coming up on a year since we lost federal funding, and it will happen again and again, and we need your support. A good way to do that is to build this matching fund to get other people involved. So the Season Watch pool could be very, very cool, whether you can put in like $50, maybe you can do $1,000, but once we get on the air and start asking folks, that will get other people to support conversations about nature, like what you've been hearing.
Absolutely.
Consider doing that. You can contact Heather. Text us at 218-326-1234.
Support for Season Watch podcast comes from the Sugar Lake Lodge near Grand Rapids, a Northwoods setting on the shores of Sugar Lake, offering lodge rooms, cabins, and golf villas with on-site dining, a golf course, and access to the lake, trails, and seasonal outdoor recreation throughout the year. Plan your stay at sugarlakelodge.com.